Cameron Sinclair was trained as an architect at the University of Westminster and at the Bartlett School of Architecture, University of College London. His postgraduate thesis focused on providing shelter to New York's homeless through sustainable transitional housing. After his studies, he moved to New York, where he worked as a designer and a project architect. But in 1999, Cameron Sinclair and Kate Storr founded Architecture for Humanity, a grassroots nonprofit organization that seeks architectural solutions to humanitarian crises. Sinclair and Storr compiled a best-selling book, Design Like You Give a Damn, Architectural Responses to Humanitarian Crises. Sinclair is a TED Prize recipient, a young global leader of the World Economic Forum, and serves on advisory boards of the Acumen Fund, the Institute for State Effectiveness, and the Ontario College of Art and Design. As a result of the 2006 TED Prize, Architecture for Humanity launched the Open Architecture Network, the world's first open-source community dedicated to improving living conditions through innovative and sustainable design. Every 2 years, this network hosts a global challenge to tackle a systemic issue within the built environment. Welcome, Cameron Sinclair.
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon. It's a glorious day in California.
Where are you?
I'm currently in Sausalito.
Very good. Oh, a glorious part of California, I must say. Can you talk a bit about your path to the work you're doing today? I mean, I just mentioned some of the bio facts, you know, but feel free to take it back to mentors or moments that moved you, because I think, you know, Architecture for Humanity is an example of something that seems to be working. And it seems to have been the original impulse of yourself and Kate Storr. I want people to get a feel for the kind of person who starts the kind of thing that we're talking about.
Well, I feel like I was duped into becoming an architect. And I mean that in a good sense. I grew up in South London, and it was a pretty tough neighborhood. And as a kid, I used to kind of walk around the streets and begin to kind of see some of the issues that were taking place. There was a place of violence, a place of very little public space, parks, and so forth. And I began to realize that it was the architecture, it was the environment that was affecting the way people treated each other. So I decided that I should become an architect, because they're the sort of people who change environments for the betterment of others. And then I found myself going to school and realizing that what they were teaching me was not how to improve low-income communities, but to build giant museums and opera houses and other things. So, you know, at that point, I had to realize there was two options. One was to give up and to try and do something more socially focused.
That spoke to your original intention.
Yeah. And, you know, the idea is like, you know, if architects aren't doing this work, then I'll have to find some other career that does this sort of work. And the other option was to just become really stubborn. And what you find out is that people that are called visionary, it's the same definition as when you're called stubborn. It's just that people understand what you're doing now. So, you know, back then I was really stubborn, and I said, you know, we need to find ways to provide design services for communities that don't often get the services of an architect, an engineer, an urban planner. And that was kind of the impetus of starting the organization, I just out of the frustration of the lack of services for these communities.
Mm-hmm. And how old were you and Kate at the time?
We were about 21, 22 years old.
Oh, I love it. I mean, I'm not at all surprised. You know, I've seen you speak, but, you know, I didn't have a real handle on exactly how old you would have been at 99. But it is interesting that the youth tend to lead.
Yeah, you know, I think there's something to be said about naivete. You know, even when we started the organization, the entity itself started because of an absolutely crazy situation, which was I was watching what was happening in Kosovo, and I began thinking about, and this was during the Balkan conflict, and a lot of people were talking about refugees and refugee camps, and it was the first time that NATO and the West were using military power to prevent civil conflict. So it was kind of the early trappings of a preemptive strike, where we were kind of actually bombing the areas that were being affected. So as an architect, I began thinking about the fact that not only had villages and towns been flattened by the internal conflict, but we as the West were using the same sort of methods to prevent it. So you had large-scale devastation. And I began thinking about, what about these returning refugees? I mean, yes, we have ways of creating refugee camps, but the moment that somebody returns back to their country, how do they have a sense of community? Or are we going to end up just building permanent refugee camps inside the country? And, you know, we happen to found the same year as Google, so we have other, it was a good year, 99, I guess. And I just went to the Google website and I looked up the UN and got the number for the UN and phoned it. And I said, I'd like to speak to whoever's in charge of refugees. And they put me through to the head of the UNHCR New York branch, and I began describing this idea of building permanent housing for returning refugees. Now, at this point, I didn't really realize what I was doing. I was just, I thought, well, I need to speak to the experts, so I might as well just phone them. Well, at the end of my conversation, they turned around, Andreas turned around, who was then leading the mission, said, this is remarkable for two reasons. One, you're the first architect in years to phone this office with some ideas. And secondly, it's a pretty good idea, and could your firm come and present to the UN? And it was only then that I realized, here I am, 22 years old, and I've just, convinced the UN that I have a good idea for, repatriating tens of thousands of refugees. So it kind of dawned on me that, naivete actually has its merits.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me tell people, by the way, I'm Terrence McNally speaking with Cameron Sinclair. He's the CEO, which they call Chief Eternal Optimist, which goes with the naivete he's just speaking about, and co-founder with Kate Storr of Architecture for Humanity, and co-author also with Storr of Design Like You Give a Damn, Architectural Responses to Humanitarian Crises. You can learn more at architectureforhumanity.org. One word, architectureforhumanity.org. Cameron will be speaking in Santa Monica the morning of February 16th, 10 days from today, as part of the Sustainable Industries Economic Forum series. So a chance to hear Cameron Sinclair, and I assume see some PowerPoint. I saw you at the LA Library a few years ago, and you usually have a PowerPoint kind of some of the projects you're working on. Yes?
Yes. I think the breakfast, I've decided to try and pack in as much as possible. So, our organization has undertaken huge operation in rebuilding Haiti. We have the largest number of architects and engineers in country. So a lot of the talk will be dedicated towards the positive side of the reconstruction of Haiti. Because, many people, many listeners will probably hear unending bad stories.
But that's right. They will have seen all those stories at year one, the anniversary, nothing's happened. That's kind of the story, right?
Yeah. And the kind of synopsis, and we'll be showing a lot of the projects, is that not only do we have a rebuilding center that's providing design and construction services to many organizations, but, next week we'll complete our second school. We'll have seven more under construction, and we'll be implementing a number of large-scale projects that should start construction in the next couple of weeks. And I'll talk about all the issues facing the reconstruction process, a lack of a government, land tenure issues. But the fact is that, there are tens of thousands of people that are working every day to try and get this country back on its feet. And there are some good news.
Very good. And for information or to register for that breakfast event, go to sustainableforums.com/Santa Monica. Okay, sustainableforums.com, a chance to actually see Cameron Sinclair talk about some of the work they've done in Haiti. Let me just read one of your quotes and have you talk just a bit about that, and then I would like to talk maybe in slightly more detail about how as well as what you're doing in Haiti. Quote, design is important to every aspect of our lives. It informs the places in which we live, work, learn, heal, and gather. We engage all stakeholders in the design process. We believe our clients are designers in their own right. Two things strike me about that, Cameron. One is that many people probably don't think of design that way. And two, it talks also about the way you work. Speak a little about that.
Well, everything around you, even nature, is designed. There's the way communities are built, the way people interact in the public space. the schools we go to, the hospitals we visit patients or are in, you know, and the homes we're in. They're all designed. You know, what we don't recognize is that design is also bad. There's bad design. You know,
yeah.
We always kind of say, look, this is great design. This is good design. The fact is that 98% of the planet do not get the services of an architect or a designer. So that the end result, these things are not thought out in a kind of holistic and long-term way. They're usually kind of based on short-term gains, which is, how can you get a roof on my head? You know, what materials are available? You know, and they're very quick solutions, but they're not necessarily good design. And what we're trying to do is to bring more thoughtful solutions to communities, because, you know, in many of the places I work throughout Africa, South America, you know, we might be working with a village or a town where they've waited 20 years for a school, and to just throw anything up is actually hugely problematic and very unsustainable for the community in the long run. So, you know, trying to think about these things beyond just the material and the environmental sustainability, but the economic and cultural sustainability. And then the second point, which is the idea about involving all stakeholders, is, you know, I can give you a good example. So for a while we were working in the South Bronx in New York, and we were working on a center, and a number of the kids who were part of this center were suffering from asthma because they were walking past many illegal dump sites. You know, they understood the areas where there were violence. They understood the places that were dangerous. And they were experts of their community. And the idea of not involving them in the design process is actually not including all aspects of the potential for design solutions. So including the end users of the building is vital, not only in having an appropriate design solution, but for the ownership of that building itself.
Right. In other words, that once you put something in a community, if someone with all good intentions has done it completely on their own, it may be like an invasive species almost in a way, and not be identified as home by the folks that it's there for.
Yeah. I mean, we have a couple of – not only do we involve the community in the design process, but we – create jobs through skills training and have them build the building, and we pay them. I mean, I know a lot of people believe in sweat equity, but, you know, when you've lost everything post-disaster or you're in an area of deep poverty, you know, the last thing you want is an organization to come along and say, well, look, we're paying for the bricks and the roof, so you should work for free for us. We actually train people up, we put them on contract, and we help create small businesses and micro-businesses around construction. So the idea is that sustainability is about that economic sustainability.
Sustainability, yes. A lot of people, you know, because it seemed to emerge out of an environmental consciousness, many people probably do not know that the general definition of sustainability is something that is economically, naturally, and community-wise, socially sustainable, that it can last because it has some roots and some and is able to live within and off of the community that it's part of. So let me ask you about the network. Talk about your network, and I remember you said that you founded the organization the year Google emerged. Some of what you do would only be possible in a networked network society, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we started with a website and $700. You know, if it hadn't been for the internet, if it hadn't been for the global response and kind of goodwill of thousands of people, we wouldn't exist. And we've kind of pushed the barriers of the kind of social networking aspect of our organization so that we have about 73 city-based chapters globally. And that represents about 6,500 active architects working on projects. And then we have a site that, you know, I won the TED Prize a few years ago, and I created something called the Open Architecture Network, which was a project management system that could kind of bring together all the designers that are focused on humanitarian response. And that network has about 30,000 people on it. So, you know, if we were a for-profit company, we would be the largest design firm in the world. but because we're a nonprofit and it's a volunteer focus, we're kind of a very large grassroots network.
You mentioned when you won the TED Prize. TED is coming up in, I think, a very few weeks right here in Southern California. For many people who don't know what TED is, what a TED Prize is, what a wish expressed at TED is, talk just a little bit about that process just to introduce them to that, because I do think it is a kind of an original force for good.
Yeah, the TED conference, it was a huge surprise to me. I can tell you my story. I was sitting on the shoreline of Sri Lanka, and my cell phone kept going off, and I kept ignoring it because I was in a client meeting. We were working on some schools, and eventually I pick up the phone, and this guy says, "Hi, my name's Chris Anderson. I run the TED conference. You won the TED Prize." And my first reaction is, "Who's TED?" I had never heard of this before. And he was trying to explain, he says, no, this is a really unique conference where thought leaders and scientists and change makers all come together and they present ideas. They have about 18 minutes to get on stage and present their ideas. And every year we award a prize. And the prize is you get $100,000. And I jumped in and I said, excellent, I take cash or credit card. You know, this is fantastic. This is a time where we were very small, so a $100,000 donation was a phenomenal leap for us. And he said, no, that's not the prize. The prize is you get to make a wish. You get to wish for anything you want in the world, and the community of TEDsters, or people who attend TED, will make it happen. And
let me cut in for 1 second, Cameron, and just say to people that TED is now in its, 20th year or so. It has a very high price ticket. In other words, the folks who do sit inside of a TED conference are paying something like $6,000 or $7,000 for the 3 or 4 days they do that. They include, high-tech folk, entertainment folk, designer folk, but they're people who can afford, either by their own wealth or the wealth of the corporation, to do such a thing. But their focus over the years has really moved toward supporting people who would never have found themselves in that organization, like yourself.
Yeah, the same year as me, there was a young filmmaker called Jahan Nujam who had just finished The Control Room, and she won as well. It's now been 5 years for us, but both of us have had this kind of unique insight on what, 1,800 people that have made things happen can do for you. And for me, it's kind of like a party. At the end of a party, you're in the kitchen with about 10 people, and those are the guys are going to help you. And at TED, it's a huge party, and at the end of it, there's about a dozen people that stand up and say, I'm going to commit to your wish and make it happen. And we had a whole group of people from Creative Commons and Sun Microsystems and, others who just turned around and said, we're going to help you make this wish happen.
And the wish was the network, right?
Yes, yes.
And the network has its own website?
Yes, it's just openarchitecturenetwork.org.
Openarchitecturenetwork.org. Tell us, I guess it'll be a preview of that talk, but tell us a bit about in a little more detail, what's happening in Haiti.
Well, I feel like we've turned a corner. I mean, the election seems to have been back on track now, and we have a good collection of staff. We even have a number of architects who are focused on sustainable construction practices, as well as incorporating renewable energy mechanisms within the structures we're building. We're underway with construction on a number of schools. We focus on schools partly because, this may come as a shock to many of your listeners, but our second largest donor base are high school kids.
The second largest donor base to Architecture for Humanity?
Yeah.
Wow.
And we have over 100 high schools across America that are raising funds to build schools in Haiti. And it's called Students Rebuild. And, they are this incredible group. And what we've been able to do is connect schools in Haiti with schools in the U.S. and elsewhere. And, so it's been not only interesting to have, 15, 16-year-olds as your funders, but how you report to them as well. And again, talking back to the network, we've had to utilize social networks and video conferencing with these kids to keep them aware of what's going on in Haiti and how the construction's going. So there's a lot of videos online of us at work.
And is Students Rebuild, do they have a website?
Yeah, they're just studentsrebuild.org.
Okay, studentsrebuild, one word, .org. In other words, I'm thinking there might be listeners out there who are teachers or students who might be interested in getting involved.
And what's great about the site is we have the Bezos Family Foundation has said that they will do a dollar-for-dollar match up to $500,000 to build schools. And so these kids are really becoming the engine, but we do have a nice, dollar-for-dollar match to help, hit the target.
Excellent. I will just say for myself, I am more likely to contribute if I've got two different things I can contribute to, and one of them has a dollar-for-dollar match. So, good for you. I think that's an excellent thing. So studentsrebuild.org for anyone out there who wants to spread the word. So, and some of the construction that's happening and so on.
So the other thing that I think I should know is we're doing a lot of consumer education. So we have something called Bate Bien Haiti, which is basically Build Back Better Haiti, which is a 24-hour hotline for anyone in Haiti to get construction and building advice. And it's manned by our staff in Port-au-Prince. And so any homeowner who's trying to repair their home can text or phone our office and get pro bono services. Coupled with that is some on-site construction training and then doing quality control of materials. And then we have a 101 rebuilding manual, which is a simple manual to allow the layman, a homeowner, to build their home safer and seismically sound.
Okay. And what can listeners do? We've given them the architectforhumanity.org website, the studentsrebuild.org website. But if someone feels like this is an area where they would like to get involved and make a difference, what can they actually do?
Well, we're taking people on. I mean, if you are kind of PhD MacGyver, if you're really smart on and understand construction practices and love to get your hands dirty, we take on professionals from a month to a year in the field. And this isn't just in Haiti, but we're working in 22 countries. And, if you go to our website, you'll see some job opportunities and design opportunities. And I know that in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have jobs not only in Haiti, but in China, in Argentina, in Kenya. And so there's a lot of opportunities for builders and for designers to take a sabbatical and make a difference.
Very good. And then the other option, of course, is to contribute and to spread the word and so on. So the book, again, is Design Like You Give a Damn. The website is architectureforhumanity.org, and then I will give out the other one, which is studentsrebuild.org, a website of high school students in the U.S. Who are funding with a one-to-one match from the Bezos Family Foundation, rebuilding of schools and the building of schools in Haiti. The site to learn more about Cameron's appearance in Santa Monica the morning of February 16th is sustainableforums.com, sustainableforums.com/Santa Monica. Thank you so much, Cameron Sinclair, and keep up your good work.
Thank you.
Okay.